I'll just say we really appreciate your patience with this. You know, we're interacting with people from all over the world, and there's huge benefit to that, and we're going to have a little learning curve here as we get going. So if you just figure out how to raise your hand, get to chat, and get to Q&A, we'll be able to respond. We do have folks here, positioned to help. And meanwhile, we are going to move forward, and we imagine questions will be coming up as we're talking. So just use that motif. One of the things that we're really, you know, most excited about is having a chance to share with you in process our thinking and to learn how to hold conflicting information at the same time as we're in a discovery process. And so we're really sharing that with you while we're in the midst of it and learning from you while you're in the midst of it. And I feel like this modeling of respectful disagreement and this kind of critical thinking and, you know, learning how to have educated speculation, not be sure of things, and essentially to not fall into confirmation bias, which is when you just get information to support what you already believe, but in fact, truly open our minds. And it's one of the things that we love about our network and that we're most excited to share with you. So we wanted to help you take advantage of the fact that we're full-time into research here on what's going on with a perspective toward what's the most empowering strategic solutions we can come up with. So if there's ever bad news in this, it's not because we want to hang out dwelling on that. It's because we feel that there's something we need to understand is going on in order to inform our most leveraged solutions. So as we engage in this patiently and excitedly, I just invite anyone who wants to just take a breath and really hold the intention that through this and all of our conversations, which we hope there will be many throughout the year, that will just keep this going, master the technology, and really be able to engage frequently with one another, to forge unprecedentedly healing and bountiful ways of being together on this planet. So thank you so much for joining in today. Foster, I'm excited to hear what you've got to say.
Well, first of all, thanks, Goa, for handling ongoingly all of these technical challenges. You know, I am so thrilled to be able to have this kind of conversation with the people who are choosing to be within it. And as much of a hassle as getting all of this technology together is, it sure beats the heck out of having to get on airplanes and travel across the world and deal with TSA and all of just the expenses of trying to get this kind of conversation together. So thank you for your patience, and Goa, thanks for handling all this. And to my dear partner, Kimberly, with whom I could not do all of this, thank you for your partnership and always being so welcoming to the network and keeping me on track and warming my heart. And to everyone who's on the call, my heartfelt thanks go out to you, because this is the conversation that we want to be in. And the fact that you're on the call and subscribe to Thrive Together shows us that you are able to appreciate and integrate what we shared in Thrive, you know, no matter how much of it you agreed with, that you could actually hold it and then move forward to engage for solutions. And as Kimberly said, this is the part that we're most excited about, because we do a heck of a lot of research and brainstorming, and but that's just what we can do. We thrive on your questions, your challenges, your insights. I have a sense of who's on the call today from the comment boards and from who registered. Some of you I already know, and looking forward to getting to know the rest. And I could spend the next 2 hours with any one of you and learn a ton. So a lot of our challenge today is going to be where we have some information to present to you, and I'll have some images that will enhance that. And then we want to address some of your pre-submitted questions. And later on, open it up to interact spontaneously as much as we can. I know it's going to be a little frustrating for us and for you not to get to say as much or participate as much as you would like to. And just know, just as Kimberly and I have been just kind of relaxing into realizing, okay, this is opening up a process that's going to be going on hopefully for years. And we're going very deep into some tricky, challenging areas. And if we can all just relax and respect one another and be patient with our technology and just dive in, then this is really a dream come true for us, and I hope it is for you. You know, this is an environment for facts and for evidence and for reason, for we invite your intuition and to be as rigorous as possible as we can about speculating in an educated way. And this is a place to hone our strategic efficiency without sacrificing our integrity, our intellectual rigor, or our morality. So this Thrive Together is intended to be an intimate space where you can join us in stretching each other's minds and in deepening our ethics and in letting our hearts be touched by the beauty of the human spirit. So before diving into some of the material that we want to present and interact about, I want to use this technology to open up the conversation a little bit. And just in order to represent all of you who are out there that we won't have time to hear from right away, I want to invite a few guests to join us. And if you raise your hand, and Go, you can remind them how to do that, then Go will call on one of you at a time. And we'll invite several of you to just take about a minute, and you can do this on video or just on the audio if you'd prefer, and just share your name or your username, however you want to be known on these calls, where you're from, where you're calling in from today, and what motivated you to participate in Thrive Together. So Goa, could you remind them how to raise their hand if they would like to do that?
Sure. So if you're in full screen mode, access the drop-down menu at the top. You know, it looks like we've got several people already raising their hand. In the participant list, next to your name, or I'm sorry, at the bottom left-hand corner of that participant window panel, there's a little icon of a hand, and you can click on that to raise your hand. So, Foster, if you want to tell me who you'd like to hear from, I'll go ahead and unmute them.
Why don't you just go ahead and choose?
Okay, great. So top of the list, first one to activate was Judy Dragon. Judy, I've unmuted you. Go ahead. Oh, Judy muted herself again. Let me unmute you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hi, Judy.
Hi. I'm calling in from California and north of San Francisco. It's been a while since I watched the movie, but I saw a couple of Foster and Kimberly's
coming from Lee Hank.
Okay.
Sorry about that, Judy. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Anyway, I was saying that it's been a while since I've watched the movie, and I remember resonating with it at the time, but what really inspired me was listening to you and Kimberly and feeling the love from you. I'm a professional intuitive, and I'm just listening to your introductions and want to cry. I love your authenticity and how you're so honoring of each other. And I'm very aware of the agenda and stuff like that, but I think you two drew me in.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, Judy. Yeah. Great. So how about we've got I might butcher this first name. I'm so sorry. Borge Milman, I'm going to unmute you. How do I do on your name?
Borja.
Borja. There we go.
Yeah, in Swedish, it's Borja. Yeah. Foster and Kimberly, I just want to say, since I first heard about Thrive from Marianne Williamson in California, and you were just showing the movie there, and there was some division about who wanted to stand with you and who didn't, and Marianne said, I have always had time for Foster and Kimberly, and I eagerly just sought to watch the movie, and the fact that you're pushing 30 million people watching it, the fact that you've given it away when you were thinking of maybe this would be an instrument that you could raise funds and regrouping, and when I saw the first opportunity to join you at Thriving Together, I said, these are my people. From 1982, I hopped out. I was a headhunter for Fortune 500 companies. Had 9 grandchildren, and I said, this world, I dreamt that it was going down, gold arose in the Middle East, people huddled around like a campfire, and it wasn't like it was, but it was a transition period. I went into gold mining, into farming, into international programs, of finance in Europe, anything I could find for the last 32 years, and I met people who when I traveled, wanted to meet me because they were being hunted down for their energy breakthroughs and showing me videos and how there was one person left after 7 people in the group had been shot. And think that I felt like the rabbi who went golfing on the Sabbath got a hole in one. Nobody in my world, wasn't anybody I could tell. They just felt I was crazy. And yet I would see that I would have these experiences literally calling me out of everything. And 7 years into it, I had taken on contracts for entire countries. I was just nobody. And found out that the CIA was involved, and it was just a nightmare. And I said, either I'm normal or everybody else is normal. It can't be both. And when you people came along, it was like an oasis in the desert. And I just want to say, this is much, much more than an intellectual exercise. This is something you people are doing heart math at the highest level.
Thank you very much.
I'm carrying you in my heart. I'm one with you, although I haven't met you. And just following your dialogue, I've followed Gene Haynes' dialogue and realized how out of hand that has gotten to some extent. You don't know who to believe, who to follow, who to endorse, and all the cowboys that are showing up and they're going to save the world by being the representative of the Marcos Gold and so on. And just last week,
We should probably wrap it up here so we can move forward. But thank you so much for what you said. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for for saying that. Love you, and I look forward to this.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Borja. And I just want to say, we'll talk more about it later in this call, but we're planning the topic of the next live event next month will be breakthrough innovations, both technical, social and environmental, their suppression and also strategies for their dissemination. Okay, go on, next one.
All right, let's hear from Meryl Anderson. Meryl, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm from Central Florida near Ocala, Florida, and I purchased my Thrive baseball cap and mug even before I saw your movie. And I am a professional artist, and I have much vision and ideas that I would love to share, and look forward to the opportunity of being a part of what you're doing, which is so gracious. And I am filled with much inspiration and hope for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Meryl. Okay, we'll open up more later on to bring people in to interact about various topics. But that really helped me just to get a sense of all the amazing folks that are out there on this call. It just really touched me deeply already. So thank you for that.
Well, so I can just say one thing before you move on. So everyone that raised your hand, if you could go ahead and click that button again to lower your hand, that would be great so we can drop you out of the attendee. Oh, perfect. Thanks so much. Foster, go ahead.
All right. So let's jump into our topic for the day, which is financial liberation. I would imagine that resonates with all of us deeply on many levels and in many ways. And I want to emphasize that this is not a self-help workshop on, you know, how to strike it rich, you know, overnight, or, you know, to kick back and wait for the lottery, or to wait for the Dragon family just to take care of people's financial freedom. But I do want to address some of the key issues on global and local levels that are involved in this, and then open it up for discussion. So I want to start by just giving a context for the sort of lens that we're looking at these type of topics through at Thrive. And I'm going to switch now to show you some images. So this should go full screen for you. I'm hoping you can all see that okay. And
not
I want to
share.
What's that?
Oh, you're not sharing quite yet.
Uh-huh.
It's not coming through.
Oh, wait a minute. I don't see that I have access to the share.
Okay, I've made you a presenter, so you should. Are you in full screen mode or standard?
Oh, I got to go back to quick start. Okay, here we go.
There we go. Now you're coming through great.
Tell me when you can see me.
All right.
Okay, great. So one pattern through which we see events that they're arising, because as you know, Kimberly and I do a ton of research on many different unpleasant as well as pleasant topics, but there's a lens that we look through that we find really helpful. And one is to be very as aware as possible as we can be of the predicaments that we're in, but then to hold it in the Thrive context, which leads us to effective solutions. So I want to just take you through kind of an example of that. So
Michael Burns is making some noise.
Okay.
Hang on 1 second, I'm sorry. This microphone. I apologize.
So the question on so many of our minds is, now, you know, now that we've jumped down into very deep rabbit holes, how do we get out of that rabbit hole? Because as you dive in there, you know, we look around at a scenario of endless war and toxins in the air, it's in the water, it's in our soil, it's in the food. We're having to deal with an encroaching police state. And they all seem to trace back to the money scam. You know, who's in charge of the money scam? But and we'll go into that, but the context that we find so helpful is to hold all of these issues, both the predicaments and the solutions, in the context of wholeness. And it's why we shaped our entire film around this recognition that nature has a fundamental pattern. This torus is the dynamic by which the entire universe, as far as we can tell, at every scale from atoms to clusters of galaxies, this torus is the shape of sustainable systems. So when we're looking at systems that are broken, it's really helpful to notice that it's a a breakdown in the wholeness of what would otherwise be a natural system. And part of the good news, as for decades I swam around down these rabbit holes, is, as we mentioned in the movie, that there's actually very few folks who are perpetrating the so-called global domination agenda. And they have gotten a hold of the money scam. Finally, now it's being exposed, but it's through their co-option of the fabrication of money itself that they've been able to try to take over virtually every sector. The good news is that we outnumber them vastly, and that we have the truth and the life force on our side. We're operating through transparency rather than deception. We're operating for integration and liberation rather than for domination. So as we look specifically at a few examples of how does Thrive see the problem and how do we relate it to solutions, if we look at energy, the risking nuclear holocaust and death through radiation by crushing atoms together is obviously a breakdown in the wholeness of a natural energy system. Same thing with, you know, using uranium or coal fire power plants to simply to boil water. The alternative, recognize the wholeness of the natural system. Mimic that in our technologies with the geometry, with the materials, and then tune that to the natural frequencies of nature, and lo and behold, it pours out clean, boundless, safe energy as long as we don't resist the energy itself. We look at our food preparation. If we look at what's going on with clearing all life out of the field, wrapping most of it in plastic, and then spraying the heck out of it with herbicides, pesticides, fertilizers, and then growing GMO crops, it's obviously a huge breakdown in a natural system that supported life for millions of years on this planet. So there are lots of ways to get back, to restore the wholeness. One of them is organic polyculture. If we look at the media, which has been consolidated, as we mentioned in the film, down to just a very few companies, not only in the U.S., but in countries across the world, the alternatives to that are independent media, like we're speaking on right now, where people can connect worldwide and actually share facts, reason with one another, and then share that with the world, you know, based on honesty and transparency rather than based on propaganda and the desire to control other people's lives through lying to them. So I could go into any sector, any topic, and this lens would be the same, but the topic for today is really financial liberation, so I want to come to economics. So what have we got? We've got fake debt-based money, we've got fraud, we've got subsidies, we've got bailouts, we've got a monopoly on currencies, we've got rigged markets, we've got government-enforced monopolies, we got political bribes and kickbacks, and it's all under the weight of this financial pyramid that we also showed in the movie, where wealth and resources flow up. This is you and me down here, and people, planet, and all living things. And then we've got these heavy layers on top of government, which is more and more, it's becoming more and more obvious, is run by the corporatocracy. So the corporatocracy is indebted to the banks for cheap loans. The big banks are controlled by the national central banks, which are controlled by the big international banks like the IMF and the World Bank. And then the central bank of central banks is the Bank of International Settlements. And from there, the control is coming down to actually try and control the whole world. Now, some people still might think that that's an outrageous comment. Here's a quote from Bill Clinton's professor at Columbia. His name was Carol Quigley. He was a trusted member of the elite who was actually given access to their archives for 2 years because he was going to write the story of the basically the financial integration of the whole world. I think they probably regret giving him that access, because in his book, he said a lot more than I think they would have wanted the rest of us to know. But here's a little gem that kind of encapsulates it. The powers of financial capitalism had another far-reaching aim, nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. So that feeling that you have that there's secret meetings going on all over the place to try to control the rest of our lives, this is just one bit of evidence out of many, many. And this is the image that we use to show the control structure that they're putting into play with these various unions. But recognize that behind all of this is the bankers. It's the plan for the bankers to use the front of the UN and all of these various unions and even the nation states as a management tool to be in charge of everything else. Okay, I actually would like to ask if Curly Bird is on the call right now, because Curly Bird is a member of Thrive Together, and this person wrote in a question that if they're here, I'd like them to address themselves. If not, I can read it for you. So go, can you check and see if Curly Bird can raise his or her hand?
Great, so I'm not seeing them raise their hand quite yet.
Okay.
Let me see if they're in the list.
So let me go ahead and start, and if you are here, we'll bring you in to interact with. But the question was, how can we create a principled economy instead of having profits above principle? Which I think is a great question. So let's look at that for a minute. And I want to pose the question to everyone, what is the principle? If you had to pick one to base a global economy on, what would it be? And I want to suggest, as we did in the movie and a number of articles that we'll link to on the event page after this this session, what we base our approach on is that the core principles for a sustainable civilization are the non-aggression principle, which is you don't get to harm me or take my stuff, and I don't get to do it with you either, except in true self-defense. If we're being attacked, we, of course, can protect ourselves. So all of the solutions that we're working with adhere to the non-aggression principle. And then a furtherance of the non-aggression principle is simply integrity, you know, honesty in one's dealings. So what do we mean by that when it comes to the market, to currencies, to money itself? And this surprises people sometimes, because one of the most common questions that we were asked as we were traveling around the world with Tribe was, well, if our current system is so bad for economics, which obviously it's failing miserably, what is the right system? And our response is that there is not a right system. Even though we're trained to think that way, that one of our challenges is to realize that instead of going to a particular regime or a particular ideology to have them tell the rest of us what we can and can't do, instead, we go to principles, and the non-aggression principle is the one thing that we at Thrive have found that everyone that we've ever talked to agrees to. They don't want to be violated against their will. We have run up against a lot of people, unfortunately, who do think that they should be able to violate others or take their money or something like that because they feel that they have the right solution, or they have the best opinion, or they're the most enlightened, or, so that they should actually be able to take other people's money and control them. But what we're suggesting is that at the core of the solution path that can actually work is the principle of freedom. And the image that I have up right now puts it kind of in a political context, because we are so trained in this country and in virtually every other country I've ever visited to identify yourself on the political spectrum. You know, are you veering toward the left? Are you a liberal, a Democrat, a progressive, communist? Or are you more on the right? Are you a conservative, or are you a Republican? Or are you a political libertarian, someone who is in favor of small government but still wants the government and wants to be in charge of it? What we're suggesting is that there's a vertical axis, that rather than live in the flat world of political ideology, the challenge is not to spiral down into the authoritarian statist realm, which is what happens, in my experience, in every country, in every regime, no matter where on the political spectrum it starts, but to actually spiral up into a true state of liberty where no one has any rights that other people don't have, that there are rules, but they're protective rules, protective of people's safety, security, right to voluntary exchange, their privacy, and so forth. But they're not coercive rules that arbitrarily tell people how much money they need to give up or what they have to do. And we refer to that as the voluntarist state, where your existence is voluntary, just like it is hopefully in your own home and with your own family, as long as you don't inflict harm on anyone else. There's another person who wrote in on the comment board, Darren Spaulding, who recommended, actually in response to the question from Curly Bird of how to create the principled economy. And I don't know if Darren is on. If you are, raise your hand. But Darren suggested that there was a lot of good work being done in answer to that question. He particularly suggested the book Conscious Capitalism by John Mackey, who is the founder of Whole Foods. And I concur, I highly recommend that book, because it really spells out what conscious capitalism would be. You know, we don't live in a capitalist society. We live in a state intervention, crony capitalism, corporate capitalism, corruption of the very word capitalism, which should ideally refer to, you know, your kid wants to put up a lemonade stand. So, they borrow 10 bucks and buy some supplies and set up the stand, and you know, now they're looking to earn some money, you know, on their capital and their hard work, which is what free voluntary exchange is. So I highly recommend that book. And while we're on this, a lot of considerations come up for people, and I've had the pleasure of interacting with many people all over the world, both online and in person, about the kind of other solutions that are being suggested. And one question we get a lot is, since money is the root of all evil, shouldn't we get rid of money? And this is what has been referred to as the resource-based economy in one context, from Jacques Fresco and also Peter Joseph of the Zeitgeist movement. And I've talked with a number of the people from that movement in very constructive and enjoyable ways. And my simple comment would be that, yes, inventorying our resources on planet Earth is a very smart idea so that we don't destroy or run out of them or hoard them. And yet at the same time, I don't recommend centralizing control over those very resources. And that's what having no money does. I think someday human beings will be so conscious that we'll be able to actually manifest just with our minds. So if you want a Picasso painting, you can manifest one. You want a new computer, you know, you want an anti-gravity vehicle, you'll just be able to imagine it will show up. And at that point, we will have ultimate abundance. At that point, there's no pricing necessary. But meanwhile, it's been throughout history that natural pricing, in other words, people can sell things for whatever they want, but they actually find out who's willing to buy it at one price, is the best allocator of resources all over the planet that has ever been discovered. Every time somebody tried to take over the allocation of resources through assuming control, whether it was through communism, socialism, fascism, And even in democracy, as we're seeing now, anytime a few people have supposedly the right to rule, it's grown to a massive income inequality and the squandering of resources, the hoarding of resources. And so to me, there are very positive steps in moving toward cooperation. But if it's done in a mandatory way at all, then it's just going to slip into those old types of dictatorship. Another question that we get a lot is, how about public banking? And I have benefited hugely, we all have at Thrive, from the work of Ellen Brown, who's been the kind of main promoter and educator about public banking, bringing to mind that the people's awareness, the fact that the Public Bank of North Dakota has been by far the most prosperous bank during the time since the collapse in economic collapse in 2008. And we have in our Thrive Solution strategy a three-stage process that we recommend, not as a a mandatory inflicted thing, but as a natural process of moving from where we are now to a truly voluntary society. And the public banking as an option in phase one and two, and we will go into these stages in detail in just a few minutes, but public banking is a great option for getting out of the mess and bankruptcy that states are currently in as we're moving to a truly voluntary exchange free market in currencies and banks themselves. You need to ask yourself, if there were four banks on a city block and one of them was using monopoly money, another was using puka shells, another was using a credit system that they were creating based on nothing, and another one actually held your assets or an equivalent to them in full in the bank, where would you bank? So a free market in banking, in currency, as well as in commerce, seems to be the quickest path to freedom as well as prosperity. Okay, and then one other issue that's up a lot for people is Bitcoin. And we accept Bitcoin on our website for various transactions. I'm a big fan of Bitcoin as an alternative. As an alternative to centralized control, or it encourages greater voluntary exchange. It's a true free market alternative, and as such, I think it's fantastic. At the same time, it's important for people to remember that it has no intrinsic value in and of itself. So there is no asset there that if the electronic system collapses or there's some sort of authoritarian regime comes in and shuts down the ability to use that blockchain, then the value of Bitcoin can literally disappear overnight. So I recommend it as an option, as a speculation, as a way to avoid the certain aspects of the central banking schemes in the meantime. But to me, it's just a great example of what I was saying before, that when you have a free market in currencies, then the best currencies will rise to the top. Okay, I want to move on from that, even though I know there must be a zillion questions and comments that we could go into at this point. I wanted to keep going on the presentation, because in order to relate it to the blog that we did before. Now I want to talk a little bit about the Dragon family and the possible scenarios that we laid out in the blog. And also I want to add several other scenarios for your consideration, because in that blog we only addressed two, and of course there are many. So I want to flesh that out a little bit today. So plan A that we covered in the blog is basically where the United States government and the U.S. Treasury goes along with the elders. And for those of you who might not have seen it, the elders are the Dragon families. It's an alliance of families throughout Asia, in China, in Philippines, in Indonesia, in Japan, Vietnam, and to some degree even in Europe. And these families are, as far as we can tell, this is educated speculation over years of research, are the current stewards of most of the wealth of the world. I certainly thought for a long time that the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers were in that role, and it turns out that over centuries, gold has been collected, oftentimes in very nasty ways, mostly in the spoils of war, where one country would invade another and take their gold, just as it has been going on, you know, in current times, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Libya, in the Ukraine. One of the first things that happened in each of those wars that doesn't reach mainstream media is the invading forces go in and take all the gold that they can find. So that has been going on throughout recorded history, and it's been kind of collected and then buried for safekeeping in various troves throughout Asia. And what we have been told is that there are people, and we know people who've met with them, we've never met with them directly ourselves, who say that these Asian elders are actually very spiritual, very advanced beings who recognize that this gold is not truly theirs, or at least not most of it, and that they're in a position of stewardship awaiting the time when they have the security, they have the opportunity to actually use that gold to basically reboot the global economic system and rescue humanity from destroying ourselves. And it seems that time is now, and that's what we're being told. So that offer is on the table, but it entails the Western banking cabal, and that is the Rothschild, Rockefeller, fiat money, fractional reserve system, which has been in place for at least 100 years in the U.S. and has been spreading across the globe to include almost every major country right now. So one of the requirements of the cabal, of the elders, is that the cabal step aside out of their position of domination and control, which has led to such environmental, economic, and just human destruction, and that they take a more humble participatory role as partners with the rest of the world in having an asset-backed system, so they don't get to make up money anymore. Now it's actually based on the real assets of precious metals, of food, of water, of people's hard work, so that money actually goes back to being correlated to real value, to human experience. And of course, the cabal doesn't want to do that because they've used this fiat money system and the petrodollar that they've enforced as the global exchange currency. They've used that to take over control to a great degree. And what we're being told is that the elders have basically said to the cabal, you know, you've blown it and you don't get to continue to do that. Another of our educated speculations is we've been told that the money that was borrowed to create the IMF, the World Bank, the Federal Reserve, the whole Bretton Woods system back after World War II was borrowed against this Asian gold quietly and has not been paid back, and it's way overdue, and the U.S. has now had its franchise to print money through the Federal Reserve terminated, and we're told that that's one of the reasons why they have finally stopped the at least overt so-called quantitative easing or printing of money through the Federal Reserve. It remains to be seen whether or not that's true. So in Plan A, the U.S. government goes along with the elders, and there's a global currency reset where currencies actually go up or down based on real assets, not on military force or smoke and mirrors. And that new global asset-backed system and the safety that entails allows the Asian elders to begin releasing this huge wealth into the world through individuals, through governments, and especially through humanitarian projects that have been selected because of their breakthrough nature and their ability to actually restore the environment of the world, to restore the economic integrity, to restore the health, to restore honest communication systems, and so forth. So These troves, I'm going to show you some pictures, and I'm not claiming anything about these pictures other than they give you a sense of what it would be like to be in the presence of these amount of collectible. Every bit of this gold was brought out of the earth by somebody's hard labor. And we're told that this is what a trove looks like. And we're told that there are over 100 of football field-sized troves around the world containing these types of volumes of pure gold. Okay, so in Plan A, the U.S. government steps out of the way, the Western cabal steps out of the way and becomes a partner with the rest of the world. These funds are released and tremendous restoration takes place throughout the world and the world economic system is rebooted. That's Plan A. Plan B is where the cabal continues to resist and go against the Asian elders. And they continue with their police state. They may continue to try to create World War III in order to inflict martial law and more taxation and all that. But in this scenario, the U.S. would be isolated. The U.S. dollar would collapse, and the level of social and economic unrest that would ensue would not be a pretty sight, to say the least. And if the U.S. government still tried to inflict their police state, I think the chances of them being able to do it when the country is actually broke, since the U.S. government is, you know, at least $17 trillion in debt, and all the major banks are hundreds of trillions of dollars in derivative debt. When that truth comes out, I don't know that they will be able to pay the military or the police to try to inflict some sort of martial law on police state. So it's critical, no matter what happens, that the emerging systems of alternative currencies and alternative organic growing and alternative media, alternative security organizations and conflict resolution and so forth, that those be allowed to emerge to replace a collapsing system if unfortunately that were to happen. Okay, that's Plan B. And we'll be doing a poll later on where you'll be reminded about these plans and have an opportunity to vote on which of these plans you think is most likely or none of the above. So moving on to Plan C, we didn't talk about this in the blog, but this is an equally critical one and a very important real possibility. And in this case, basically, it turns out that the elders either aren't who they claim to be or don't have the wealth that they thought or don't have the power to use that wealth for good. And in this scenario, potentially, the Chinese government as well as the other BRICS countries, that's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, despite the fact that they are showing all of these signs of working around the Federal Reserve and the NSA and the Western banking system, in this scenario, potentially, they're actually all secretly in cahoots with the Western cabal to create the very one world government run by them amongst other central bankers and to use that to create global control. We warned about this in the film, and we also talked about a one world cashless currency. And with a cashless currency, then the bankers could strip anyone of their assets with a keystroke, and the currency that has been suggested for this is the SDR, Special Drawing Rights, which was actually invented 60, 70 years ago out of the IMF and was suggested as basically a global fiat money system where the IMF and the World Bank would be in charge of on a global scale, basically what the Federal Reserve here or the central bank, the Bank of England does in England and so many other countries, central banks. So now it would be on a global system and the bankers would still be in charge. And it would turn out that the collapse of the U.S., which could still happen, was exactly as we warned about in the movie, was a way to fool people into thinking that they were going along with the new system that was going to be better than U.S. tyranny, but instead it turned out to be global tyranny. And meanwhile, the American citizens gave in and the U.S. economy collapsed, and now the entire world was at the mercy of this global system. Some people have referred to this continuing demise of the U.S. As a a slow burn. And in this scenario, basically, this would be a scenario that would operate without the elders having a strong influence, and it would end up under the dominance of the Bank of International Settlements and all that entails, the Western banking system, the IMF and the World Bank. So that's Plan C. Plan D is also without the elders, as I've described, but in this case, China continues its economic growth, and it has been hoarding gold besides these troves. It has been openly holding gold and mining gold for decades, and it turns out that their economy becomes the strongest. The yuan becomes the new mandatory global currency of exchange, and now we're in a global dominating situation, but now it's the People's Republic of China running the show instead of the U.S. or the BIS. It's still a scenario of dominance. That's Plan D. Okay, one more. And in this one, we'll call this Plan E. And this may sound very strange. It's highly unlikely in many ways. But at the same time, I don't want to write this off. Because once again, with the educated speculation and the years of research that we've done, this one seems to actually play an important role, potentially. Plan E is that the helpful as well as harmful roles of extraterrestrials and interdimensional beings ends up playing a huge role in the outcome of these huge global dynamics that are shifting right now. And this is quite a scenario to entertain. On the harmful side, you know, potentially if there are reptilian beings, the so-called archons, the tall grays, and other beings that have been reported to not necessarily have our best interest in mind, let's say. Or on the other side, we've been told that they're very helpful beings, like the short grays, the Tyrians, the Pleiadians, and so forth. And I must say, as I contemplate this, it just cracks me up that we could end up with a whole new level of cosmic bigotry, where now we're arguing about, well, yeah, you know, I should rule you because you have scales, or you don't have scales. And, okay, we're both gray, but you're too tall or you're too short. And once again, it's an opportunity to just really get in touch with the core principle. It doesn't matter what you look like or how tall you are. What matters is your behavior. Whether it's on the global level or the cosmic level, are you violating other beings or not? Okay, so that's Plan E. And then on the poll that you will get, you will also see a none of the above. So, Goa, if you would, I'm going to back out of the keynote presentation right now, and I would love for you to offer the poll.
My poll disappeared.
I don't see a poll yet.
So yeah, the poll is active. You have to have the polling panel open. And if you can't see that panel, it should have become activated on your right-hand side if you're in standard mode, and there'll be a little orange. At least for Macintosh users, it'll be kind of lit up orange. You might want to expand that to see it. They're definitely getting lots of responses. We've got about 50 people that have not started yet. Are you able to see the poll now, Foster?
No, I don't.
Foster, look down in the lower right where there's a bunch of icons and there's a question mark and there's the one to the right of the question mark says polling.
Okay, I see it. Thank you.
Sure. We've been practicing with this technology for a while, but there's something new every time. All right, maybe we should their hand to see that the, how do we see the results?
There's about 40 people that are still waiting. Another 10 seconds or so.
And we won't hold you to this, nor will your name appear as related to your response.
Just fun to see. Yeah.
Okay, so there's the poll results.
Eight.
Looks like Plan A is the clear winner.
No answer.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's not an easy one to answer.
No.
And, of course, there are other scenarios that are not amongst the ones that we pose. And that will be open for further discussion. We'll talk about that in a moment.
Okay. We have questions, too.
Okay, so Gore, are you all set? Should I proceed?
Go right ahead.
Okay, so this, I didn't want to include this one in the poll, but I want to mention a Plan F. Actually, probably the best word for this would be a Plan U. We'll call it Plan U. And this is one that we're going to use as a topic for one of these calls in the future. But it's one I want to get you going on thinking about. And the question that leads into it is, if you personally were the steward of quadrillions of dollars worth of wealth at this time in history, in other words, you've got plenty of wealth, money's no object, but you need to use money, what would you do with it? If we're not going into a scenario with a dominant yuan or the SDR, if they continue with at least, you know, they're talking about in the new reforms, still having, you know, 30% reserve rather than 100% reserve banking. And if any revolution would just install the next regime, as every revolution throughout history has, and every regime ends up moving to tyranny, then what would you do with your quadrillion? Would you distribute? Would you grant? Would you loan? Would you invest? You know, who would you get to help you? How would you build networks of trust around the world to help literally spread the wealth? So if the elders are for real, then they are obviously having to consider this question. And I have spent a lot of time thinking, okay, does their behavior so far correlate with some reality where they actually are in this position? And I have to say that in terms of their strategy of patiently checkmating the cabal, you know, waiting until they had million-man armies and nuclear weapons so they couldn't be just invaded and pushed around, and creating all of these alliances with now, you know, over 100 countries around the world where they're starting to use their own currencies instead of the dollar, and bartering and trading instead of being dependent on this corrupt system. I would say that they've actually done a very masterful job of getting to this point. And then the question is, but what now? And I want us all to be engaged in answering that question, and hopefully we will be actively engaged in manifesting the answer to that question. And we will be using that for one of the soon upcoming events to get that conversation really going. Okay, so I want to move on to the question of, with these various scenarios in mind, we won't know for sure what's going to happen until it happens. So in the meanwhile, what do we do now? How do we get out of this rabbit hole ourselves? So there is a person who wrote in a question on the subscriber comment board who called themselves Jan890. So, Jan, if you're there, please raise your hand so we can bring you in. And Jan was asking, what about the impact of these potential changes on my personal life? You know, what's going to be, how would one change their investment? How would one protect their assets? How would one protect their friends and family and communities with these various scenarios in mind? So go ahead, is Jan on the call? We don't see a hand raised so far. I wrote back to her suggesting that she get on the call if possible, but we understand that there are many more members of Thrive together than are people who have the middle of their Saturday free for 2 hours. So we'll go ahead and just start interacting with the question, because it's a great one. And you know, it's important to consider these global issues, but they always come back to show up locally. So I just want to share a little bit about my perspective on that. And that is that given that we don't know which of these scenarios is going to be true, and that collapse could very easily happen, no one is arguing with the fact that on the books, the government and all the major banks are bankrupt. So it's important to get that the sort of collapses, inflation, social unrest and so forth that has happened throughout history in virtually every other country could in fact happen in the U.S. I'm just speaking about the U.S., but picture whatever country you're in. It probably already has happened there, and I've learned from a lot of you who've been through it already. But it can happen in your country. So we highly recommend to people that they have a protection plan and that they stock in food, that they stock in seeds, and they have frozen and freeze-dried food enough for themselves for a period of weeks or months at least, and enough to share with friends. And also recommend that you protect yourself in any way that you can, whether that be arming yourself if you need to, especially creating coherence amongst your community so that you know each other, and if things collapse, you've already met, you've gotten together and talked about a plan for sharing food, sharing water, sharing protection, being in communication if the internet or phone systems are down. In terms of protection of assets, given the likely collapse or at least significant revaluation of the dollar in these various scenarios, and even in a beneficial currency reset, we're being told that the dollar could devalue from its current, you know, kind of fictional and inflated status. It could devalue by anywhere from 30% to 70%. So you need to take that into account in future planning. And we highly recommend that to whatever degree that you can be owning real estate, owning your own home and being out of debt as much as possible, that you put some of your savings into actual real assets. And that means, you know, precious metals, food, water, things that you can trade in terms of times of collapse, whether that's, you know, toilet paper, alcohol, tools, whatever it is. If you haven't thought this way, you may feel like, oh, I'm going to seem like one of those crazy preppers. Well, just imagine for 10 minutes sometime what it would be like if all of a sudden your internet went down, your power went off, and by the time you got to the store, there wasn't any food. And then you think, okay, how am I going to take care of my loved one? So this is kind of like when they make an announcement on the airplane that if the oxygen goes out of the cabin that you, and these masks drop down, that you put your own mask first so that you can help your neighbor and your children. And this is that. If you go through a few steps, which you can handle in a day or two, then you can relax about it, number one, and then work toward it never having to happen, number two. And if it does happen, you can take care of yourself, your loved ones, and people in your neighborhood. Okay, so let's talk global for a minute.
I'll add just one thing there on the preparation, because I think, again, it's one of those things where it's such a weird thing to do, holding the possibility of, you know, plan A, and at the same time making a provision for that not working out. And it's sort of part of the whole process here of holding this conflicting realities at one time and deciding, you know, what's best for you and what you're in a position to do. Clearly, there are plenty of people who are just barely banking it financially and aren't in a position to, you know, really have any assets to protect, but who still want to be as prepared as possible for any number of scenarios. And again, like Foster's talking about, and Mike will be covering the, on the next event, when we talk about breakthrough innovations, you know, part of that is alternative communities and ways that local communities are developing building relations that are primary now in local communities and aren't government dependent or money dependent even, so that there are things that people can do in any economic bracket in any community around the world depending upon your belief. I just wanted to say, I know for me in this, that whole notion of holding the conflicting realities can be weird, and preparing for something that you don't want to have happen can be weird too. And then figuring out what's your part in that and then just doing it has been best that we've seen to people who we've been asking. So thanks, Foxconn.
Thanks, Kimberly. So I just want to handle one more major point, because it's really along the lines of, well, what can we do? And when we're scrambling around trying to do things, if you can base your scrambling on principles rather than on politics, I think you're going to find we've got a much better chance of surviving and thriving. So I wanted to address that, because as we said in the film, the core principle, really the true north of our solutions approach, is this principle of non-violation. So how does that fit in today's society? You know, Martin Luther King had he said something which has really stuck with me, which is that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. So when we look back in history, you know, from the kind of domination of the pharaohs and then the church and the kings and all the different ism dictators, and ultimately coming to democracy, we've come a long way. And the shining light was always for the people. It was always, how do I get my freedom? How do I feel safe? How do I, you know, become prosperous without it being at other people's expense? So what we suggest is that the arc of the moral universe is bending in the right direction, but we're not there yet, and democracy is not it. It's the best political system by far that I've ever seen. However, our democracy is not a real one with all the rigged voting and the bribes and all that kind of stuff. We're not really in a democracy, and even if we were a democracy, policy gets decided by 51% of the people, and that could be 49% of the people unhappy. And any democracy is a government which runs on taxation, which is fundamentally taking people's money, usually against their will, and then doing something with it, very often not what they would have wanted to do with it. And I haven't heard a good argument yet for how that is not theft or violation. And basing civilization on theft and violation just doesn't seem like a good idea. So what's the alternative? And we've talked briefly about this transition to the liberty society. And I want to go back to the images and bring up the three-stage outline.
Hold on a second.
I'm sorry, I seem to be missing a slide. Hold on a second. I apologize. I must have put this in the wrong slideshow by mistake last night. I don't want to take the time to go look for it. So while I'm describing it, let me have you just contemplate this quote. And what I'm describing, it's really reiterating what was in the film, is that stage one of our transition strategy is might be most closely identified with, in the U.S., the political stance of the progressive. In other words, we still have a government system. There still is some taxation. And while we're reducing that taxation, we use the money from cutting the military budget in half and getting rid of the Federal Reserve. That would free up literally trillions a year, which would be enough to restore the environment, get rid of poverty, health issues, and so forth, not only in the U.S., but the entire world. So in phase one, we're taking care of those who have been most damaged by the corrupt system that we're in without creating any new violations, and we're shrinking government. Stage two is probably most closely identified with the libertarian political view of shrinking government down to what some refer to as a minarchy, where the purpose of government is only the protection of individual rights and the commons. And then while that government is shrinking down to that size, and we're stopping the wars of aggression and getting rid of all that, you know, subsidies and crony capitalism and all that type of thing, we think it will become really obvious that whenever the government services were replaced by services provided by individuals who are allowed to be prosperous and who have had their wealth restored, both in stage one, when those who are most in need are being helped with housing and healthcare and, you know, a return to organic farming and that sort of thing. By the time we're in stage two, I think it's going to become obvious that people are much better off with independent organizations providing services of education and protection and infrastructure and so forth, than a government which seems to continually fail at providing virtually all of those. So I think it's going to be a natural movement into getting rid of what I consider to be the core cancer of tyranny, which is the notion of authoritarian rule to begin with. So even the minarchy, if you allow a little bit of cancer to stay in your body, it's apt to grow and come back and take over the body. So in this scenario, we actually move beyond the notion of anyone having rights that other people don't have. We move into a voluntarist world where there are protective rules, not aggressive rules. And there are regulations, but they're regulations against fraud and counterfeit and that kind of corruption, rather than arbitrary rules, you know, setting prices and so forth by the will of a few. So in this world, there are those rules, but there are not rulers. Okay, so what I think is that that plan, that we haven't seen a lot of other people, even amongst the libertarian or voluntarist communities, really proposing guidelines for the transition. And we invite that, and we see that as one of the major roles, one of the things that we have to contribute. Kimberly and I are actually working on what's either going to be a long paper or a short book right now on the major, what we call the mind traps, the kind of intellectual eddies that come up when, as soon as we start talking about, as soon as everybody agrees, yes, I want to be completely free, and I don't want anyone to injure me. What are then the considerations that come up that have so few people really acting for a voluntary society rather than a government-based one? And there are things like, yeah, but what about the rows? Or what about poor people? Or what about sick people? What about education and so forth? All of which are hugely important and valid issues. But what we're writing about, and many others have written very well about before us, including Rothbard and Mises and Coppa and Boaz. You know, my own son, Trevor Gamble, has written a great book on this called The Secrets to Nonviolent Prosperity. Stefan Molyneux and Larkin Rose, fabulous videos available on the internet and books available online for free and so forth. So if that's the vision, if that's where we're going toward a society where everyone's individual Torah is honored, and where the basis is the freedom of everyone and integrity, then how are we going to get there? And we think that this is a plan that doesn't need to be imposed. It's actually, we're going to notice that it's occurring naturally, because people are so frustrated with the political system, the corruption is becoming so obvious, so that as we start to use taxpayer money to help people rather than, you know, wage war and give it to the bankers, that's naturally going to happen. And government, with the kind of popularity it has, at least in the U.S. right now, is naturally going to have to shrink. And so these stages, I believe, are going to happen naturally. But if we're aware of the goal, if we're aware of where we're setting out on the ocean to sail to, then we've got a much better likelihood of actually being able to set a course and stay on a course that follows that true north, follows the compass of individual freedom rather than, you know, political power and authoritarian will. Okay, so I want to leave it at that. And then I want to open up to some questions. And there are a number of questions that have been submitted already that are on this topic. And I want to reward the people who've submitted questions first here. And I'd like, if possible, to bring on Kareem Gibbs. And Kareem, if you would raise your hand, and love it if you'd come on with your video or audio if you prefer. And while he's doing that, he wrote in and said, the rule of man is the cause of poverty. Around the world and throughout history, countries with the most oppressive rule of man became the poorest, most oppressed countries that led themselves into inescapable suppression and tyranny. I couldn't agree more. And he goes on to say, in order to get rid of the rule of man, we must remove the fundamental ingredient that nourishes the rule of man. And that fundamental ingredient is, he calls it initiatory force. This is the same as the non-aggression principle. No one's allowed to initiate force against another except in self-defense. So Goa, is Kareem available?
Yes. Hold on a second. Okay, Kareem, I've unmuted you. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. How are you, Foster, and everyone else? How are you guys doing?
Hi, Kareem. Thanks for coming on.
Can you show up on video?
I guess. Let me see. How do I do this?
Hold on one second.
We might as well get this one down. Since this is our virgin run here, we might as well figure out how to do this piece, because we want to be able to see you whenever possible, unless you're in the bathtub.
I didn't get my hair together, but it's okay. There's a joke.
Okay,
though,
so Kareem,
I've
upgraded you to a panelist role, and now if you click next to your name, there should be a video button that's either should be gray right now. Click it, and it'll turn green, and then we'll share your audio, your video.
Okay. So Kareem has been working on something that he calls the 12 Visions Party, and we're seeing this as a very powerful, you know, step one and two innovation leading toward step three of our transition strategy. So, Kareem, if you have any comments or would be willing to describe a little bit about that in a couple of minutes, we would appreciate it.
Yes, definitely. The 12 Visions Party is a lesser-known movement, but it's growing gradually. But I believe it's going to grow into a complete world-changing phenomenon. 12 Visions Party was actually founded by a gentleman named Mark Hamilton. He's an author of several prolific pieces of literature. And 12 Visions Party has been developed over the last 30 years. And it was actually started in 2009 officially. Basically, you know, initiatory force is the problem, as Foster and we all understand. The 12 Visions Party is a non-political party. So basically, it's really not, its intentions are really non-political. Its intention is actually to depoliticize the country. But if they're going to be running for office and things of that nature, it's illegal to call it, to categorize yourself as anything besides a political party. So, I was also never into politics before, but I'm actually a acting as chairman of the New York sector of the 12 Inches Party. So at this point, the 12 Inches Party is planning to make all the people wealthy, including the poor. If you consider the fact that the 21st century personal computer revolution allowed ordinary people to have the buying power that only a few years ago only millionaires were able to have. But the 12 Inches Party is planning to take that same model and bring it throughout all industries, and ordinary people will be able to afford things that only millionaires are able to afford just previously in all industries. What's going to happen is that people, the different industries won't be suppressed by the regulatory web that's suppressing all the industries nowadays, and people will be able to, businesses will be thriving, jobs will be thriving, jobs will be readily available, and what's going to happen is people are going to be able to aside from getting jobs, people's buying power will increase, values of services and products will increase, and basically people will be able to will become rich without lifting a finger, and that will happen promptly after the 12 Inches Party president's time in office. So yeah, I'm very excited about this. I thought it was so important to make sure the Thrive Movement was aware of the 12 Inches Party, especially you, Foster, because you've been doing some amazing things with your wife here, with the Thrive Movement. And I love what you're doing. I think it's only natural and perfect for you all to know about this this 12 Inches Party movement and. It the support is gaining gradually as the years go on.
Thanks for sharing that. That is a great summary, Kareem. I have one question on your description. I followed everything except the part about people being able to become millionaires without lifting a finger. Could you say more about that?
Yes, definitely. To best explain this, the reason right now the regulations are holding back a lot of progress, as you know, with medicine, with education, in all these areas. The business market, and people will be able to become rich without lifting a finger, because what's going to happen is once these industries are free from the regulations, because the 12 Inches Party is going to be bringing forth something called the Prime Law, as you just read out from my comment, that prohibits mandatory force, fraud, or coercion against any person's property, self, or contract. It even prohibits the government from initiating force, and that's very key right here. So the government. So because the regulations and all the different bureaucracies and everything that has nothing to do with protecting individual rights will be done away with in law. By amending the Prime Law to the United States Constitution, these bureaucracies and all these regulatory webs will cease to exist from that point on. So because these industries will be able to flourish and our buying power will go up, because aside from our buying power going up, by the way, prices will go down because of the free market competition. And the market will be so healthy, and prices will be falling, because prices will be falling, and our buying power will be going up. And so our buying power will multiply 100 times, even 1,000 times, just like what happened in the computer industry, which was lightly regulated. And that's the only place we've ever seen that. We're able to afford computer power right now that a few years before only millionaires were able to afford. So that's how it's going to happen. So
I think I get your point. I think it might be misleading to say that basically you don't have to get up off the couch or get out of bed, because I think people will still need to engage and participate. But I'll tell you, I worked with all of the economists who were in our film that we interviewed for the film before the film came out to do some calculations on what would be the impact on an average citizen and their family if free energy were allowed out and the financial violations of taxations and arbitrary regulations were stopped. What would be the impact? And their estimates were that people, now picture this for yourself and you can also just multiply it for your family. They said that they guessed that you would have between 6 and 10 times the income that you have now working the same or less, and 6 and 10 times the assets in a short amount of time that you have now. So this is hard for people to visualize because we're so propagandized and so accustomed to thinking in scarcity terms. But imagine if the bankers weren't hoarding most of the wealth. The wealth that has been gathered in trove is released, and people were free to, they weren't having to pay their electric or fuel bills because that is now very inexpensively accessed, and now business was on it. People would very quickly have the assets to not only feel safe and secure, but to start their own businesses and to help other people along the way. And then each of those businesses would become more profitable, hire more people, and so forth. So even to be very conservative, imagine everyone that you've got three times the income and assets as you have right now, how that would change your life. And I think that freedom and a conscious transition to that freedom is the path to that. Okay,
absolutely.
So I really appreciate your coming on. I want to move on to the next topic. Now, quickly, I want to mention that several people wrote in. Linda, Mary Kloman, and Steve Erickson were all asking some detailed questions about the Dragon family. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail right now in terms of the questions they asked. Some of the questions were about whether Karen Hudes of the World Bank, whether or not her questions, whether or not her knowledge was accurate about gold troves in Hawaii and in the Vatican and in the Philippines. And I have to say that I don't know the answer to that. Karen Hudes was a whistleblower from the World Bank who came out against the World Bank in many of their corrupt policies and then was rehired by the World Bank. And I'm really glad if she won her battle to be reinstated there. I'm not exactly sure why, knowing what she knows now, she would want to work for the World Bank. If she's working there to try to get it on track from the inside, more power to her. And I know when I first heard her interviewed by Carrie Cassidy from the Project Camelot, she didn't seem to be aware of the troves and it seems to have been educated in them since then, but I don't have specific knowledge about the ones that she's talking about. I know I've been told that on solid ground that there are ones in the Philippines, but I don't know about the Vatican or the ones in Hawaii. Okay, I also want to mention that several people, including David Chemnitzer and Andrew Goodall and Richard Montanari, Borier, who's on the call, Carol Holman, and someone named Randy, were all writing in asking about questions about various breakthrough energy technologies. And I'm not going to address them today because I look forward to getting into them in great detail. And because of the response we got after the movie and also after launching Five Together, our team has decided to make that the topic of our next online event like this, which will occur on Saturday, December 13th, same time, noon Pacific time. And that will be on breakthrough innovations and dissemination strategies. And we're going to cover a lot. We've gotten to see so many just encouraging thrilling technology and projects. You know, water purification, health, agriculture, decontamination, eco-communities, alternative currencies. It's just amazing. So we want to give it its due and report a lot of good news on that. Obviously, there's a lot that we can't say specifically about particular inventors and who they are and where they are and the details of their technologies, but we can give you an overview of that which can be made public. And we just find it thrilling and brings a lot of hope with it. There's also a couple of people have written in about education. Lee Hamble and Anna Dieter are both experts in various aspects of education, and we're going to do a live call on that one as well. And also Michael B. was inquiring about a disciplined approach to activism. And that too we'll do an entire event on, because that's what we've been dedicated to since before the movie came out. And as many of you know, there I think as of yesterday there were 1,029 Thrive Solutions groups, independent groups inspired by Thrive around the world that are taking on over 200 issues. And now they're communicating with each other and sharing best practices, lawsuits, petitions, resources, fundraising techniques, and so forth, so they don't have to all be reinventing the wheel. And we have a very specific process for self-identification to get clear on who you are, what would be the best use of you in your opinion in whatever you choose to take on. And then a sector model is great for organizing a community around one issue or getting clear on coordinating multiple issues in either local communities or globally. So those are some of the things that we're going to be addressing. Someone also wrote in, Philip Stevens, about open source and the work of Robert Steele. That's, again, a passion of ours. GOA is quite an expert on open source technologies, but Robert Steele is talking about open source everything, especially intelligence agencies and so forth. That's a very dynamic topic that we'll be going into. So for now, I know that I've been long-winded here and we're running out of time, so I just want to take the time that's remaining. I've been too busy to be looking at the question and answer thread there, but I know that Rob and others have been looking at it. So if either Rob or Kimberly or Goa want to just recommend a couple of questions that we can take in the remaining time and we can bring the asker online, that'd be great.
Sure. I see one here. Grant Hunter has a quick question. Maybe Goa, you could see if Grant Hunter wants to show up on video. The question is, just curious if the reference to gold as being a more secure carrier of value than fiat currency, what about the fact that the value of precious metals floats today like any other asset class? Is it really more secure?
Unfortunately, it doesn't look like Grant is in with the connected audio, so I can't actually unmute him either. So it was great that you read the question, that we could just answer it now.
Okay,
yeah, great question, Grant. In my view, the value of everything should float. You know, the gold is a hunk of metal that somebody dug out of the ground. It has some intrinsic value in the sense that it can be used in some technologies and people think it's really pretty, you know, to wear as jewelry and so forth. It's simply the most reliable and effective currency for being a medium of exchange and a storehouse of value that people have found so far throughout history. Now, silver is also useful in the same way. Palladium is becoming more useful. But it's important to distinguish the value that we give it from the intrinsic value. So the notion that any particular person should set the value of gold, you know, the way Roosevelt did when he confiscated everybody's gold, is not usually a good sign. If somebody tries to peg the value of gold, it means they want to control you and your finances. So yeah, gold should float like everything else in an honest free market where what we're doing is exchanging value. That's the fundamental of an economy. A real economy is not some centrally planned thing any more than the weather, you know, should be. It's always failed whenever anybody's tried. A real economy, in my view, is billions of people making voluntary exchanges every day based on the fact that they trust the person that they're dealing with, and they think that their lives will improve through doing the trade that they're doing. And the other person thinks that their lives will improve, and that's why things get so much better. It's why technology gets so much better, health technologies and processes. Everything gets so much better in a true free market because everybody's making decisions that will improve the value of their own lives. So that will self-select for projects and artifacts which have value to real human beings. And that's why I think gold is a valuable backing for a currency, but it's not by any means the only thing.
Okay. Shall I just move on to the next question here?
And his last question was, is it really more secure? And I think it's way more secure than fiat money because fiat money is backed by nothing at all. It can disappear because somebody says it disappeared. If you actually own gold or you own land or you own a home or you own a computer, it is a real artifact in the three-dimensional world that we're all learning to deal with, and therefore you can protect it as personal property. And if somebody tries to take it away from you, it's obvious and shouldn't be allowed. So no asset is any more secure than the security that you can create around it, but it's a lot more secure on a philosophical basis because it has real world existence rather than just an idea. I mean, I'm all for credit systems. I'm all for, you know, the Liberty Dollar and the Terra and the various local and time-based currencies that are created. I think those are fantastic as long as they work for you. And people will try to corrupt them, absolutely, and they should be prosecuted and make restitution. So it's always a challenge to have the medium of exchange be honest. But the most important thing is that no one's given the authority to dominate it. Okay, next one.
Okay, how about penny? I can't see very close. Penny Heifel, maybe? Heifel, yeah. She says, is she there, Goa?
I can't unmute her either. You're picking
okay.
The ones that are not.
Sorry.
Okay.
All right. Well, Penny said, what is the time frame for any of these scenarios taking place? And I was thinking, Foster, it might be helpful if you can quickly run through a few current events to just kind of get the sense of how currently this is all unfolding.
Actually, if it's Penny Heifel, I was looking at the wrong person, Penny Lynn.
Okay,
so hold on. I can unmute her. Let's
great. Listen. Penny Heifel. Thanks.
Penny, are you there?
Hi, yes, I'm here.
And a video? You don't need to if you don't want to.
Where do I do that?
It's your choice. If you'd like to, I'll move you up as a panelist.
Great.
Would you like to?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Hold on one second. Okay, so next to your name now, you should have a little video camera icon. You can click on
that
and share your video.
Great, thanks. Hello. Just do these quickly so we can get to a few, but I thought that's important.
Hello.
Hi, Penny.
Hi.
Hi.
Good to see you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
Yeah, so in terms of timing, first of all, be clear that from my point of view, nobody knows. Even the people on the inside of the inside, right at the core of this, you know, they're all battling with each other. So even they don't know. So this is an unfoldment of real human beings and who knows what beings on other levels that is going on. What I can tell you is that we follow the current events both through mainstream media and through alternative media and through our own confidential sources that are much more in touch with these working behind the scenes than we are. And it seems like things are accelerating very rapidly. And there's well, first of all, the activity of the BRICS community that we mentioned a little bit in the blog only is accelerating. Just in the last few days, I've been collecting some of the articles, and China's just opened a $4.2 trillion stock market to the public. They've got this new gold exchange. They've created huge currency deals and trade exchanges with Canada, with New Zealand, Pakistan, Russia, Australia. They're buying gold in huge amounts. So the motivation seems to be continuing to strengthen economic alliances that aren't dependent on the Western banking cabal. The last meeting of the G20 just ended last weekend, on Sunday. And I've been going over the literature coming out of that meeting, and it's very telling. You know, part of the discernment that we all need to practice is trying to read between the lines on what these documents really mean or what people are really saying. And there are two main things that I get from these documents. First of all, that they are fundamentally still cabal documents. Most of these countries are run by their central banks, and they've re-upped their commitment to the IMF and the World Bank and UN and all that kind of stuff. So you read through the document, there's a ton of what people refer to as Orwellian doublespeak, where they're basically saying, I've highlighted some of these things, that what they refer to as our monetary authorities are going to or committed to. Now this all sounds good, but listen to it. Listen to the verb. This is what the monetary authorities are going to do. They're going to lift growth. They're going to boost economic resilience. They're going to strengthen global institutions. They're going to implement structural reforms, and they're going to strengthen public investment. Now those are all things that people would do on their own if they were allowed to, by their own free will. But here's kind of the government of governments on a global scale saying, no, we're going to do all this. In other words, we're going to control the economy and we're going to make all this stuff happen. Now, on the flip side of this, the other main thing I saw come out of this G20 meeting is that for Plan A to happen, for the U.S. government to go along with the rest of the world, really, to go along with what they call the IMF 2010 Reform Act, to be what they call Basel III compliant. The U.S., I think maybe Israel, I'm not sure on this, are the only countries not to have agreed to some accords that happened to try to correct what happened in 2008. And this means that all the countries need to have higher levels of reserves to try to stabilize international commerce and national banking system. This is at the same time really good news, because as soon as the U.S. agrees to this, then the whole world can move to this new banking system that will be asset-backed, and fiat money will be in the process of disappearing, and ultimately fractional reserve banking, because that's just another form of making up money out of nothing. So it's a huge step which will allow the reset of currencies to happen, that a lot of people have been waiting for who own those currencies, but it has impact on everyone, because that will also not only move the world to an asset-backed basis, but it will also acknowledge the creation of a global system that will allow the Asian elders to begin releasing these vast funds through a system that the cabal doesn't run and therefore can't steal all the money as it comes through, which they have been doing for a long time. So the main point that they made, let me actually read it to you, because it's powerful in their own words. The communique that came out representing all 20 countries was, the implementation of the 2010 reforms remains our highest priority for the IMF, and we urge the United States to ratify them. If this does not happen by year end, we ask the IMF to build on its existing work and stand ready with options for next steps. So there's the formal acknowledgement of the scenario that we've just been saying. The U.S. was given a deadline of last December 31st to go along with these accords, and they didn't do it. And they've been stalling time after time after time all year. And Obama supposedly just refused 2 nights ago, once again, to go along with it. And so now the deadline for him and for the United States is December 31st. What happens after that? If they don't go along, I think they will restructure the IMF so that U.S. no longer has a veto, and they will begin proceeding with isolating the United States and moving to this global asset-backed currency system without the dollar. I don't think that's going to happen. There may be a further delay. They may go along by that, but this is where the various scenarios that we've described are so important.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, I think I'll just add here, you know, when we made the blog and we said, is the value of your money about to change? I think because in any scenario, the fact that, you know, right now these almost trillion-dollar deals are going on between Russia and China, and it's really the first time since the 40s with the Bretton Woods Agreement. And so because of that, you know, there's a significant change here in the boosting of the U.S. dollar, as Foster was describing. And you can track these very real changes. They're really unfolding every single day. They don't inform exactly what scenario is going to unfold because, you know, China buying up a bunch of gold and being in the position that it is doesn't mean that the elders aren't going to participate. It doesn't mean that they're not part of an overall Bank of International Settlements total global cabal takeover. You could carry it any number of ways, but it is important to watch that unprecedented things have happened with regard to the world organizing to change the role of an imperialist U.S. Dominating currency. That's absolutely guaranteed that that's happened. And so now which way it's going to unfold, you know, like Foster's been saying, we'll just watch and see. But I think to be educated about how we're, what is going on and to read between the lines, that's really a huge part of what these calls are meant to do, to say, you know, like I said, this is our in-process thinking. We want to share it with your in-process thinking and get ever better at being able to do the interaction so we really benefit from the insights that each of you bring and also from the questions that you're asking. Because, you know, I don't know, here we are, we're a little after two. There are a bunch of great questions here, and I don't know if the best thing is to say, let's move these questions onto the comments board at the on the events page, and we'll continue to interact there, or whether we can take a few more questions now. I love this. This is my favorite part, to be interacting with everybody. Foster's too. We love you guys, and it's so much better than just kind of having this something between us besides engaging real time. So it's our favorite thing to be doing, and especially this really is unfolding as we speak, and so I think it's very important that we have each other and share what each other has to bring to it. So do you want to take some more questions? Or
Kimberly, what I recommend, since most people were probably planning on ending at 2, is that first of all, if people need to go, please do, and we won't take it personally. I recommend that since we can have the window open longer, that we go another 15 minutes, just do whatever questions we can. And we treasure these questions, and we will keep all of these questions. You know, I'm keeping a log of everybody's questions and insights as they come in, and we will address them, whether it's on comment boards or on future events or blogs. This is exactly the interaction that we are hoping for, and the frustration that we knew it would come along with not being able to get everybody in on this particular call.
Yeah.
So let's go another 15 minutes and pick another question.
And I just want to remind, thank you. And also I wanted to remind everybody, you know, if you can just talk about this, share it among your friends, that we really are opening up a global conversation here, and we truly invite people to join in and bring the insights and to bring different points of view. You know, we really want to have people who don't agree with any of these scenarios or who think something else or really unpack this whole thing about money and what is its role. We feel that, you know, we've learned so much of what we've come to understand by listening to people who disagree, so that we're, you know, forced ourselves to consider, well, what's our, each of us, what do each of us believe? And we want to do that with you too. So this doesn't just need to be, you know, those who share this worldview or not. Just open it up and when you have conversations over the holiday season, invite people to join in with us for Thrive Together on December 13th for the one on breakthrough innovations, which is really also very exciting. And, you know, we have a lot of questions, why isn't it just all open source? And we'll really unpack the various scenarios that we see. So that's that.
Kimberly, I'd like to take one question that I see because it follows so naturally on what we're talking about now. And this is from Michael Spieth. If he's available, I'd love to bring him in. And his question is, don't you think that it would be a positive sign if the elders would spend their gold on projects like the Venus Project or others open source or crowdfunding projects? And this is a question and comment that's close to our heart, and one that we agree with you. And we have been in ongoing communication through whatever channels we can, saying exactly what you're suggesting. Because it's really a tricky situation, because representatives that we know of the Dragon families, they need to be secure in how they bring funds out, as secure as possible. And it's been proven numerous times that if millions of dollars start moving through the cabal system, particularly billions or trillions, they will either stall it or stop it, and most often they will feel it. So they have to be patient with that, and at the same time, it drives us crazy when we hear people talking about, well, you know, the money will come when humanity is enlightened enough. Well, you know, what are you waiting for? There are thousands, hundreds of thousands of great projects all over the world that have been working on a shoestring, proving their integrity and effectiveness, even with very little funds, and who could just take off and fulfill their vision with game-changing innovations, and all they're missing is the money, and oftentimes some consulting, which we and others are going to be providing on legal and security and marketing and distribution and manufacturing, all that kind of stuff. Those resources are going to be available too. And our most recent communications are confirming that they already have been quietly funding some projects, and that they want to move as quickly as they can into funding more projects. Actions are being taken on that balance the security issues and the vetting issues with their strong desire to get money into the hands of these projects. And what we're recommending to them and everyone else is that once that money starts to flow, nobody has the time or the desire to effectively find all of those projects themselves. So what we're suggesting is fund the known projects, but then as all this huge wealth is available, then each of us flow it through the projects that we've each found and invite the people who are running those projects that we know and trust to select the next recipient. Kimberly is very experienced in these realms, and she says this is called flow-through funding, and it will create very rapidly a global network of not only money flow, but of trust and of love and fulfillment all over the world, and grow organically in a way that no centralized authority could dream of accomplishing.
Great. And for that, I'm going to introduce another question, shall I?
Sure.
Okay. Carol Holman. This is a very strategic one. So, well, there are rumors floating around that the U.S. government can seize gold and silver holdings. Is there any validity to this that you're aware of?
Yeah, it's a really important question. And several years ago, I received an email that some of you may have seen that was purported to be a document that was sent around to banks throughout the United States. I don't know about in other countries. But it was warning the banks, saying be prepared for societal collapse or economic collapse. Be prepared to close your bank and confiscate any gold and guns out of the safe deposit box. And so that really got my attention. I asked several banker friends that I know who confirmed that they had been sent and read that very email. So I would not depend on the banks to protect your assets, and whether or not the U.S. government, in this example, would try to seize gold and silver the way that they did back in the 30s. I mean, it was so interesting. In the year 1933, in that year, you could have gone to jail for drinking alcohol and been just fine with holding gold. And then within a few months, you could go to jail for not surrendering your gold, and then you could drink alcohol. So it shows how arbitrary this authoritarian rule is and how ridiculous and really ultimately dangerous it is. So they could. I've talked to some experts about this question, and most of them have said that in our current situation with the Internet and with 300 million gun owners in the United States, and still, thank goodness, a strong ethic of freedom, not only here but in many other countries around the world, most of the experts that I talk to say that they really feel like the seizure of precious metals is not practical. Even if they tried it, they couldn't do it, and that they most likely won't try it. But I would still allow for the possibility and protect it in other, more private ways.
All right. So I think it's fair to say that we will be addressing questions and comments and stuff on the event page following this call. So we're ready to forward to your comments there so that we can follow up with things that we haven't been able to get to here. And I know for some of you who've written in good questions, Martin Pope is it about open source. We're definitely going to be talking a lot about that in our next event on December 13th. So I'm going to save that one till then. And also, who is it here? Somebody has a good, Nelson Purdy has a good idea about business models, which we also will be discussing with regard to the dissemination strategies, because business models are involved in all of this. So I encourage you to write more about that on the comment section of our event page, and we'll be interacting with you there.
Kimberly, yeah. Melanie has asked, how can we be an extension of Thrive in promoting this next fall? This was awesome, and this was inspiring and hopeful. What would you say to that?
I would say talk about it, because really it's through word of mouth. You know, Thrive has, I think it's almost 27 million documented views. And we never have had a marketing strategy. It's all been word of mouth talking about it because it's useful. And we, you know, there's all these strategies for how to get things out and spread, but the bottom line is if it's meeting a need, it will grow. And we really hope having a global conversation like this is meeting a need. And if it is, then talk about it and spread the word and get friends and family members to join Thrive together so that we can continue the conversation and continue it, like I said, across worldview. We really want to open up this dialogue to include all different perspectives and then to help each other out as we go forward. So I would say, most of all, talk about it and take the time to ask your questions, especially as you can tell from this, when you submit them in advance. It's really helpful for us because we're looking into lots of things all the time, and to know that we're really have our finger on the pulse of what's up for you is helpful. So it's great to do live like this, interacting also, but when you submit them in advance, it helps. So if you do that, it's great. And
there's someone named Jan McGuire has asked, I'd like to convert my savings to something concrete such as gold. Where do I start? We recommend that you just look in your local area for a precious metals dealer that has a good reputation, ideally has been around for a long time. And if you don't find one, write to us at info@thrivemovement.com. I don't want to be promoting any particular dealers or services or anything in a call like this, but there are some that we know of that have proven very reliable, and we can help out individuals if you don't find someone in your local area.
How about Peggy Lynn Rivera? Want to just answer that too?
Is the BRICS Bank available for individuals investing or making deposits? It's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. I've seen things online from some very knowledgeable people. trying to answer questions about where can I invest if the stock market's about to crash. And one of the answers that I see from people much more knowledgeable than me are to invest in the yuan and invest through the BRICS bank in or BRICS bank, banks from different BRICS countries. The BRICS bank that we talked about is really not an investment bank. I mean, it's a bank for investment in developing countries. So it's taking funds from taxpayers from various countries and then investing it for those reasons. So I don't have the mechanics at all. I personally am not very familiar with offshore investments, particularly as the regulations are changing so fast. I think it can be very risky to separate yourself from your assets by too far a distance in various regulations. But at the same time, with what's going on in this country, some of them could end up being a lot safer somewhere else than here. I know that there's a Jeff Berwick and a site called the Dollar Vigilante. They're very experienced. They travel the world all the time checking out these various things. So you might want to check out their website and inquire of them. They know much more than I do.
And we will continue on in the subscriber portal to post resources that we find useful. And I want to remind you, as I hope you do with us, that you know, we'll put sources for things, not because we agree with everything that that source is saying, but because there's some valuable perspective to consider. And it's an essential part of wading through what's going on right now is that we don't stay attached to a particular worldview as we're doing the research, because you will find that you can glean really important information from all different sources. So we're making those resources available for the network and want you to understand that it's not because we're promoting everything they say or believe in the whole perspective, but because there's something valuable there to consider as we're moving forward trying to, you know, come up with the best way to navigate our way out the other side of the rabbit hole, as Foster was saying. So
we're coming up on that extra 15 minutes. So what I recommend is that we bring in two people just to kind of represent the group to say anything that they want to say in closing. And then I'll do the same and then Kimberly can wrap it up.
Well,
so raise your hand if you'd like to come in for a final word.
Okay, great.
And this isn't a question, this is just a your experience of this, is that what we're asking?
Yeah,
okay.
just a one minute.
Okay, how about Nelson? Nelson, you're unmuted, go ahead.
Well, thank you. Yes, it's an honor to be able to be here. I do truly believe when I first came in contact with Thrive, and the whole universe does have solutions, and I've been sitting on one that involves and encompasses all that Thrive is about, and it can, you know, it's just a matter of time to be able to get, obviously get the funding to make an idea a reality and a tool. And so I'm honored to be here, and I look forward to discussing things that would impact and could go across the board to all ideas and people that are interested in making a better world and with a better system. So it's a business. Yeah. And I mean, I'm a part of Victory and Giving, and it's a true giving cycle that this new business model is structured on, and just amazing how it, you know, it will work.
Great. Thank you so much.
Appreciate that. Yes, but stay tuned for the next event, because that's exactly where we're going to be talking about those types of innovations.
Yeah, write to us about it on the portal page before our next event so we can bring that up.
One more, go on.
Okay, let's hear from Lincoln. Lincoln, go ahead. Lincoln Justice? Oh, I think they just dropped off.
Oh, Lincoln Justice?
Oh, there he is.
Yes, hello.
Hello, Lincoln.
Yay!
Welcome.
Just want to say commend you for an excellent program.
Thank you.
Yes, and we are in in Missouri, which some people pronounce misery, but it's looking better. My wife Rachel is with me, and she has a question regarding the inclusion of the females female principal. Go ahead, speak up.
Yes, wherever I do my reading and research, it seems that any country or location can prosper once they equalize or balance off the society with a feminine principal, which is interested in people and the environment and animals and the planet, and their interest is naturally in that direction rather than in profit and greed. So that if we could bring up to speed a balance in society of the genders, I think we would move along a lot faster.
I totally agree with you, and I really appreciate that input. And to me,
an example of that.
Can't hear you. To me, the non-violation principle is like the ultimate that the pure feminine energy represents. It is the ultimate protection of all beings. And I'm really glad to see more and more women in positions of leadership.
Yes.
And at the same time, I remember Kimberly telling me that her grandmother was a suffragette who really thought that once the women got the vote, people would stop fighting. And obviously that didn't happen. So I totally agree with you about the empowering of the feminine principle, and ultimately it needs to be the universal life principle of no one. Everyone has equal rights and no one is violated.
Thanks so much to all of you for participating. We are really grateful that you took your time on this Saturday. Maybe you can mute to everybody. Thank you. Thanks to everyone for taking your time on this Saturday to join us. And please continue to keep the comments coming, and we will be engaging with you there. And Foster, just something you want to say for
I just want to say how grateful to all of you I am for your open-mindedness and your open-heartedness and joining us in this endeavor. It's even more than I hoped for. I'm really excited to get to hear more from you. I am learning like crazy about solutions. You know, for years I was learning like crazy about all the conspiracy and all the bad news. And now through people like you, I'm learning like crazy about really viable solutions and how we can collaborate. So I'm really grateful. Spread the word, and bye for now.
Great. Thanks, everybody. Cheers. Yeah.